So we'll start with the Shulchan Aruch. The Siman Lamed Daled is about Psulei Eidos. Psulei Eidos in the sense of Psula Mishum Avera, as opposed to Krovim, which is a previous Siman, as opposed to the next Siman, which is about Kereshot Avikata and Isha and so on. So this is about people who are Psula Mishum Avera. So certain averos disqualify a person from testifying. There are extensive sugyos in Sanhedrin in the third parak that deal with psulei eidos. Okay. So let's just establish the fact that we're dealing with someone who did something that makes them psulei eidos. How do we psul someone for eidos? Well, the answer is you need eidim to psul somebody for eidos. If a person walks into Beis Din and says, I'm an Afarian, and I'm Pasal Eidos, we look at him and say, thank you very much, but in Elam Esam Asim Rasha, and at least in a situation where he wasn't eight already, he's Mechuyev to testify. Period. Okay. So, two Eidim come and say that Ploni did an Avera. Ploni did an Avera. So the Dayanim ask him, when did Ploni do the Avera? So he did the Avera on October 3rd. So when does the person become possible? The Eidim ask us a bunch of questions, and it checks out, basically. And we said that he was Mechal Shabbos on October 3rd, and we were talking to him, and he said, I know it's Chil Shabbos, but I don't care. I don't care. So when, from which point onward is this person possible? The nafkamina being, obviously we're not going to allow him to testify now, and we're not going to allow him to sign on the shtarne. But what would happen if he had signed on a shtar in the interim, or he had given testimony in the interim? What does it do to those cases? So the Shulchan Aruch says in the beginning of the sif that there's a difference between isurim derabanan, psulim derabanan, and psulim deraisa. As a general rule, psulim daraisa do not require what's called hachraza. We don't have to make an announcement to the world. So-and-so is pasul la'edus. Psulim d'rabanan, they were more meikal on because they didn't want to be mastered to people who had relied upon the edim in the interim and maybe didn't know about them. You might call it like a pseida de lekuchas. So since the psul is only d'rabanan, hey mamru, the rabanan pasul them, and the rabanan said, we'll accept the edus that happened in the interim. There is a famous machlokas Abai and Rava about an eid zomim. An eid zomim, eidim testify on January 1st to a certain events. They testify on February 1st to other events. Eidim come on March 1st and say, I say, eidim come on February 2nd and say, or I guess it doesn't really matter when. They come March 1st and say, the testimony that you gave on January 1st was testimony you couldn't have given because you were with us in China at the time, and you couldn't have seen what was going on in Jerusalem. So when is the Eid Zomim Nifsa? So there's a machlokas Abaye and Rava. Abaye says, Eid Zomim Mafreya Hu Nifsa. He is disqualified retroactively. And Rava says, Eid Zomim Mikan Ula Abahu Nifsa. It's only Mikan Ve'ela. The Gemara offers two explanations for Rava. One explanation is Pseidid Olekuchos. And the second one the Gemara offers is that an Eid Zomim is not believed, that he is believed to be wrong. Not just that he's not believed, but we disqualify him and we accept the testimony of the second people. So that's a Chiddush. That's a Chiddush, because one might have expected that you would treat this as a treu trei. And by a treu trei, when two witnesses say A and two witnesses say B, what do? We throw them all out and we don't know who to believe. By Eid Zomim, we believe the second set and we don't believe the first set. And we punish the first set. So because Eid Zomim is a Chiddush, Rava said, only when he's actually, the Eidim come and make them Eidim Zomim, not when they gave what we consider the false testimony. The Gemara says, the nafkamina between these two is that they testify somebody was a goslin. So we don't, in other words, if you say it's because Eid Zomim is a Chiddush, so then of course, Rava would agree, it's Nisan Lafraya. If really Mikra Adin Rav agrees with Abaye that the psula is always the mafra, always retroactive, but because the pseid of the lekuchos, people who relied, who use that testimony in the interim, who signed shtaris and so on, you're going to now disqualify all that And they didn't realize when they used these data that they would be psulim. So then, that's true whether the psul is a zomim or a gazman, either way. Needless to say, we don't paskin like Rabba. This is one of the six cases of Ya'al Kigam. We paskin like Abaye. This is the ayin of Ya'al Kigam, Eid Zomin. Okay. So, this din is din by Psulun Daraisa. By Psulun Darabanan, you require Hachraza. That's the backdrop to this Ramah. Is you have to assume that when you disqualify Eidim, they are disqualified from the time. They are disqualified from the time that they actually did the Avera, not when Beis Din announces it. Interestingly enough, very interestingly enough, the question of when are the Eidim Nechsharim, so an Eid who becomes Pasul can do Tshuva. Do the Tshuva. So supposing an Eid does Tshuva, but we don't know about it, and they signed on a Shtar, but Beis Din hasn't actually been put their approval on the Tshuva of these people to say, yeah, they're Kashuva Eidus now. And then they subsequently go to Beis Din and make this, yep, these guys are kosher, they've done tshuva, it's perfectly fine. So when is Inich show from? From the time the Eidim sign on the thing, or from the time the Beis Din is machshir? So you would have thought intuitively and obviously it's from the time that they do tshuva, but it's apparently the Shach quotes a machlismah. Sma, I think, already quotes a machlokas harishonim about this issue. Okay, I'm not going to say anything further upon that, but let's, right now we're working with the assumption that Eidomim and Masreya hu nifsal, that Eidim psulim deraisa of psulim mafre. From the time they do the Avera is the time that they are psulim. Wonderful. What's the problem the Rama is confronting? This Rama is based upon a tshuva of the Rifash. A couple of you asked me about this tshuva. You went looking for it. I didn't send the excerpt to the whole shiur. If you have an afternoon, and you may require an afternoon, is that a fair assessment, Benji? You could go read this tshuva. It's like a soap opera. It's an unbelievable tshuva. The Rifash, who lives in Spain, he leaves, I forget when he's born, around 1325, I think. He leaves Spain after the 1391, when the first wave of persecution conversion, and he winds everything in Algiers. So you have this tshuva that he writes. It reads like a soap opera. You get all. He gives you all the names of the man, the woman, the two men, and the woman, and the witnesses, and the dayanim. And like you see all these Spanish names, because that's what she said. And they're all Don somebody. It's really unbelievable. And the basic storyline was that some guy had contracted to marry this woman, maybe married her, and then some guy came forward that he had actually married her first. What almost certainly happens, the first guy had, I don't know if like she was from nobility. I have no idea what the backstory to this is. Why he was so, the first guy was so, the second guy was so obsessed with her. But it would seem that he hired all these false witnesses, all kinds of sheker, to claim that he had married her first. So in this very long tshuva, so the tainis were presented to the Rivash. In this very long tshuva, he goes through one by one to see whether or not the Edom, whether or not the first marriage has any basis, or you can just dismiss it completely. In the Maskana, I'm pretty sure I didn't read the whole tshuva. I skimmed some of the paragraphs. There's only one. I think his pretty clear conclusion is we're not chosesh for the first guy. The guy who came later said he married her first. We just dismiss it. But there's one paragraph in particular, if you're interested, I can send it to you, in which a number of issues of psula avis are actually brought to the fore here. Stuff that comes up in Siman Lamedal, not just the Siv, and this is the basis for the Rama. So in this particular sif, by the way, in this particular paragraph, he doesn't accept it as grounds for dismissing the first marriage. He has other grounds. But the claim was made that the Edom were psulim for various kinds of reasons. But part of the challenge was, in one of these things, that you didn't know when the Edom were nifsalim. You didn't know when they were nifsal. And if you can't put a date on it, I don't remember who that gave these like Spanish names, I can't remember who it was. If guy, I don't know, let's call guy number one is the one who's married to her. Guy number two is claiming that he was actually guy number one. So guy number two, one of his witnesses became pasul, but nobody knows whether that was before or after the date that guy number two claims he actually married the woman. So it's in that context that the Rivash responds and says, that's not grounds for annulling the Kiddushin, because the Edom start out with the Cheskes Kashrus, and then you know they're Pasul now, but you don't know when they become Pasul, so you assume the last possible moment. So let's just read the Shulchan Aruch here quickly. Benji, please. But that's by Psul Doraisa. By Psul Midivrayim. All right, then that's like a Pseid of the Lakuchas. We don't want to make such a nightmare for people. Now the Ramah says. Now, if you stop there, by the way, there are. This doesn't have to be read in the right in the light of what everybody's about to say. It could mean that in order to apostle someone, you have to have clear evidence that he's apostle. Not just maybe he's apostle. But that's not where he's going with this. He says, Kigon. Okay. So he says, just quoting the Rivash, that if you know Adam became Sulim, but you don't know when they became Sulim, they have a cheskas kashrus until you know they became Sulim. That's what Rivash said. That's what the Ramah cites. Okay, well, that would seem to be pretty straightforward until Lictos comes along. Now, one other piece of background, which I think he does cite, but I just want to explain it before we read it. It's in the second paragraph. Basic detail of shtaros. Basic detail of shtaros. When you write a shtar, you date a shtar. You put a date in there. Why do you put a date in the shtar? Let's talk about halvas. Let's talk about halvas, subos, any kind of chiyav or shibud, anytime you mishabed yourself. Why do you put a date in there? It's not so the historians will be able to write things about it. What's the purpose of the date? Rami?
That the lender cannot claim that he already paid it back, assuming that the shtar is predated. The borrower cannot claim that he already paid back the loan, which he would be able to do if the shtar was predated.
That's a clever suggestion. That's not the purpose of the date in the shtar, because the basic evidence of the shtar, Rami, would be whoever's holding it. Right? So relevant to the sugya that we're going to do at some point, that another pareb tosnano, or are you pareb tosnano? Okay. But something more basic, Ephraim. What's that? Lekuchas, shibud. In other words, when is the shibud chal? I lend Elimelech $10,000, and I lend it, I insist on getting a lien on all of his land, and he sells that land subsequently to other people, so I only have a shibud on the land that he owned at the time of the Hava, or the Akne. We write it in our Ksubos. Anyone remember the text of the Ksuba? De Kanois, U, the asid anol lemikne, that which I have acquired and that which I will in the future. That's a major sugya later in the, I think, the 10th parak, the question whether the akne works or not. But the bottom line is we assume the akne does work. And therefore, when you write the date in the shtar, it is okay to post-date a shtar. It is not okay to pre-date a shtar. Why are you allowed to post-date a shtar? You're allowed to post-date a shtar because by doing so, today is October 13th, and I write in the shtar that I'm lending money to Elimelech on October 18th. Well, from one vantage point, that's stupid on my part, because Elimelech could go right now, sell all his land, you know, squirrel the cash away, and comes the due date, and he says he, or maybe he spent it all. You know, he bet all his money on the Giants, and he lost big time, and now I have nothing to collect from. Why? Because I post-dated the shtar. But that's okay, as long as both parties agree. What we're not allowed to do is to predate the shtar, to antedate the shtar, in which case I will be claiming shibud on properties that Elimelech no longer owned at the time he borrowed the money, and I have no shibud on them. So shtarim mukdamim are psulim, and shtarim mukharim are ksherim. If a lova and a malva write a shtar, and there's a date in the shtar, and Tal and Josh sign on the shtar. And then the Shtar is brought into Beis Din, and the Shtar is dated October 3rd. And then Alter and Yitzchak come and say, excuse me, that's impossible that you signed on that Shtar, or that Shtar that you witnessed the loan on October 3rd. You were with us hiking in Harriman State Park on that day. So it's impossible. It's impossible. So what do Josh and what do we respond, in fact? I don't even have to respond. You know what we say? No, that's not a problem. Because maybe Josh and Tal postdated the Shtar. They wrote October 3rd. They were actually signing October 1st. So you can't be mazim edim in a Shtar like that. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. I think the Gemara already says. Now, how can you be mazim, Josh? And remember, when edim sign on a Shtar, without doing that sugya, we say it's nasa kimishanechkor edus on a basin, which is really taken almost literally. When you sign on a Shtar, it's like you're giving edus and basin at that time. And that's the way most Rishonim understand, in one form or another, the famous question that's asked. It's discussed in the Beis Yosef quotes, a lot of Shitos. You can't testify in writing, right? It has to be mipiyam velo mipiksavam. So if you walk into Beis Din and a person is a mute, they're very brilliant, they're intelligent, but they cannot speak. So they can't give testimony because they can't write their testimony because that's mipiyam velo mipiksavam. Don't be a wise guy and ask me, I don't know what the din of sign language is. Don't know why, it's not really short. You make a hakira there, but bottom line is, if they can't verbally communicate, So then mipiyam velo mipiksavam. So how do you ever have a shtar? How does a shtar ever work? Right, a shtar, we say, edim hasum al shtar nasa kemish nechor edus on the basin. So the Rambam says that shtaros are derabanan. You have to figure out exactly what that means because there are some shtars that are clear there, I said. But the Rambam believes that edus and a shtar, let's say of hava, is all derabanan. Chacham invented it all. Right? However, most Rishonim don't agree with that. And there are various kinds of answers that are given, but one of the answers, presumably, and probably everybody agrees to this, when we say, the Gemara says, Eidim hachasumin al ashtar, Eidim were sons of Ke'isha nechre edusim abeisin, it means literally they're giving testimony at that moment. Okay? And whatever reason, it's kasher in ashtar. It's a kasum, Rabbeinu Tam, I think, says it's only if the Edom are not capable of verbally testifying, but if they're capable of verbally testifying, then they can write their Edom also, whatever the Torah is. A bunch of interpretations in the Rishon. So bottom line is, when you signed in the Shtar, it was like you were giving Edom, but it's possible that you postdated the Shtar. So therefore, there's no issue. But what if Josh and Tal say, no, Bizmano Chasamnu, Bizimne, we signed it that day. In other words, what happens is they come into Beis Din. Well, let's say we want to be Mekayim the Shtar. There's a Din de Rabbanan that if I pull out a Shtar on you and you claim the signatures are forged, so the Shtar is forged, I have to at least verify the signatures. It's a Din de Rabbanan. It's called Kim Shtaris. So in this case, if Josh and Tal say, we signed it on that day, and now Edom come forward and say, you couldn't have signed it on October 3rd, because Imanu Hayisim on that day, so then the Rif says that they are psul. Then the Gemara says they're psul. So let me ask you a question. Today is October 13th. Tal and Josh signed on a shtar that says October 3rd that I loaned Dali Malach money. When are Josh and Tal pasul from? Give me a date. Yitzchak.
October 4th.
What's that?
October 4th.
So let me ask you a question now. What's that? Well, no, we don't know there was a loan. When are they puzzle from? No, it can't be because their testimony in that star is invalid because they didn't sign it. They didn't sign it October 3rd. So when are they pasul from? I know, but Zomamim, it's an Afreya. Everybody agrees. I mean, that's the Maskan. Rav may not agree, but
there is no
what?
There is no Afreya here.
even though you technically in the past might have been zoning them, now they're being...
When did the Eidim psulim him from?
What was the case again?
October 3rd, the Death Star says, October 3rd, Eilin Eli Malachmani, signed Polster and Urshler. But it says on the bottom. October 3rd. Yitzchak and Alter, thanks, come and say, what do you mean? You guys are hiking with us. You know, we did a full day hike in Harriman. We left October 2nd in the afternoon. We camped out. And we said the entire October 3rd, we hiked the Appalachian Trail in Harriman State Park. We camped. We didn't camp, but at least we rewarded ourselves the second night with a stay in the Bear Mountain Inn, and then the next day we came home. So there's no way that you could have been in Hoboken and have signed that star. That's what it says in there. Imanu Hayisim. So I'm asking you, when are these Edom psulim from? What's the date on the scarlet letter that we stamp on their foreheads of a pay for puzzle? What date do we inscribe inside that little pay? Why? No, it doesn't. You're not actually answering the question. Gabe?
The last date, it's the earliest date in which we have seen their signatures on that.
Excellent. Give them a prize. From the time we know that that star existed is the only time we can apostle them. You can't say they're apostle from October 3rd, because once you disqualify that they signed on this Besheker, now the question is, when did they sign them? They only signed on the Shtar from the time they signed on the Shtar. For our purposes, when we know that the Shtar existed. For all we know, they could have signed on the Shtar in January, or they could have signed on the Shtar this morning. We have no way. Now, if we saw the Shtar yesterday, in October 12th, or let's say we saw 2 days ago, October 11th, and we saw someone holding the Shtar, and now they put it in the sealed envelope, and they put it based on the desk, and then October 13th, Basin opens it, but we know that they know that unless a malach switched the star inside the envelope and managed to open it and reseal it, they know that that star was on the desk October 11th. So you know that the Edom already psulim by the end of October 11th, or whenever they were handed this star. So they're only psul from the time that we know the star was bolam. And the star itself doesn't provide any evidence when they're psul, because we know that the whole chasima was sheker. They claim that they signed the star in October, they signed it bismano, and we know that they didn't. So now the question is, when did they sign it? Well, we have no idea. So if, in fact, you are correct, Alfred, if we have no way of knowing when that star existed until I walk into Basin and I say, here, my rabbi said, this is the Shtar Hava. So if it was not known to exist before now, it's only possible from October 13th. That's correct, because we don't know. So as Bixos will note, that's essentially exactly the din of the Ramah. Same as the Rivash. The Riff and the Rivash are on the same page. When did the two of them become Edom Zon? From the time that we know for sure they were Edom Zon. And that's only when they signed on the star. We don't know, and only we know they signed on the star when we know that they signed the star by a certain date. So if we have no other knowledge, then it's the date that the star is pulled out and based in for the first time. If we know that the star at least existed a week ago, even though we don't know it existed October 3rd, and October 3rd is actually totally irrelevant here, so then it's possible. It's possible only from the time we know that it existed. Excellent. Okay. So now, so this principle, the Rivash, obviously has very, very deep roots. So now the Ketos asks a question. What is the Ketos' question? Yitzchak, can I impose on you to read? Is that okay? Okay. Go ahead. You often know that when your Chavrusa reads, you're next, so you can always anticipate. Okay, which we say, O Chavrusa, O Misusa. Go ahead.
Now, and from now on, he's not
Okay. So let me just ask one question about cheskes kashrus. How do we know he has a cheskes kashrus? What?
Everybody does.
Yeah, probably Elimelech.
Yeah, but
no one uses it. No, no. We say in Adaf at his name, you still have a cheskes kashrus. And if you don't have a cheskes kashrus, for sure these are not Neman. But how do we know that every person that starts a cheskes kashrus? Well, you know, I'm thinking about Tosis's, I'm going to make the Tosis question. Presumably, the day that they were bar mitzvahed, you know, and they got an aliyah, and they, as far as we know, they weren't over any averus. There's no evidence to that. So that's the point we assume. They started out life as a cheskes kashrus. There might be some interesting discussion about this. You know, one could have, who said everyone has a cheskes kashrus? What's that with that? Is it your friend? No, somebody said that. You know, that puts a particular spin on humanity. Right? There's a general philosophical question. Is man fundamentally good, or is man fundamentally a beast? What's that? Ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu rav, right? So we might say that yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu rav, but his maisa may not make him a rasha. His heart's desires might be for rishus, but not his actually deeds. So, I'm sorry? I'll tell you what I think, but I don't think I can prove this. My experience in life, which is obviously mostly with Jews, but sometimes non-Jews, is that all human beings are the same in terms of there are different cultures. You can have people with different cultures, but that's true across Jews and non-Jews as well. A non-Jew doesn't generally speak you have nemanus, except for maybe there's a wild sheet of Rabbeinu Yakar. Rabbeinu Yakar is cited by the Beis Yosef is claiming that a Nachri who's truly, truly Neman is Kashal Eidus. And most of the other Rishonim say, what? What are you talking about? It's against the Mishnah. But I think that sometimes, I think it's clear from Chazal that some Gentiles were clearly of sterling character and some were not. Like Dama ben Nesina. So I think that that the answer is, I think within, for the things that a guy is relevant for, I think he probably also starts with Chesed Kashrus. I could point to Agados that would say otherwise, but I think Meikar Hadin probably within the realm of Dinim of B'nai Noach, I assume that a guy starts with a Cheskes Kashrus. That's what I would assume. But I don't know. So for our purposes, the Rivash says, for Eidus purposes, which a non-Jew cannot give, obviously, in the context of Jewish faith and outside of Rabbeinu Yakar, so there is a Cheskes Kashrus. And therefore we assume Vamrinan Hashtahu de Isra. He has been disqualified now. In other words, when we know that he did an Avera, then he did an Avera. Until such time he's assumed to be Kasher, even though we know he did an Avera now. Okay, so now that's basically what you have is the Chazaka beforehand that he's Kasher, and the fact that now we know he's possible. Now the only question is, when was that Chazaka? When did it change? When did it change? So now he says, go ahead. Okay, so the Imkain.
So Apanami Nema Uke Mamanakas Kasas. We should also say over here that we should leave the Maya on a Kazakha, Bahare Pasu Apanaka, and then the Aidim are considered possible before Vesa.
Right, in other words, here's what we have. We have Cheskes Kashrus of Aidim, Cheskes Kashrus of the Mikvah. Aidim are Pasulim now, we don't know when they became Pasul. Mikvah is Pasul now, we don't know when it became Pasul. In the case of the mikvah, the psul now wins because there's also a cheskes tuma on the gavra, or whatever it was that you put in the mikvah. And when it comes to the issue of the edim, there's a cheskes mamon that should also win. In other words, even though the Eidim et Cheskas Kashrus, if they're being, assuming they're being Motzi Mamon, of course, that's the assumption in this, if they're being Motzi Mamon, so that Chazaka on the Mamon is like the Cheskas Tuma on the object of the person that went in the Mikvah, and the Maskana is that it's a two against one. So the fact that the Eidim are Psul now, combined with the Cheskas Mamon of the Nitva, should defeat the Cheskas Kashrus of the Eidim, and you shouldn't be able to, you should not be, as opposed to saying the Eidim are Psul until we know they became Psul, the Eidim should be considered Psul until the last time that we know for sure they were Tasha. That's what should be. So that's the Tosis question. Let's continue. Right. So you have a person. They have a person who has forgotten all of Hilchos Shechita. Apparently, he once got certified. He took the course in Reitz, about learning how to shecht birds. He learned all Hilchos Shechita. He got 100 on his Tachina. And now comes a couple of years later, and he doesn't remember a thing he learned. He doesn't remember the Psulim of Shechita. He doesn't know Chamesh Hilchos Shechita. He doesn't know anything. So now the question is, he can't shecht anymore. His Shechita now is Cheskas Pasul. The question is, how far back? So the Tasa is basically any of his kelim, we're going to assume that it goes back as far as it possibly could go back. It's almost like we're going to assume that he hit his head right after he took his bechina, and he forgot everything. That's what we're going to assume. Why? Because on the one hand, you had a chazaka that he was a baki in Cheshchita. Now you know that he knows nothing in Cheshchita. But you also have behima b'chaya b'cheskas yisur medes that shivad v'chavan b'men neshchata. So you have once again two against one. So the Taz says that's like mikvashin and davin and tzachasa. Right? You're measuring the guy. You give him a bechina the second time around. He gets a zero. That's the mikvashin and davin and tzachasa. Okay. So the Taz says that. Go ahead. Cheskas mamon is stronger than all of the chazakas. Okay. He seems to think that. The question is that really true? Okay. The Afagav. And let me tell you about the reason he thinks that is because of a Gemara in Ksubas. That with Chazakos against one another, Cheskas Mamon wins. Okay. Go ahead. Now stop for 1 second. Let me explain this. The Mishnah in Kulin, I think on Daf Yud Dalet, says that if a person shechts a behemah on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, the shechitas kshera, even though the mischai benafsha. Leave out Yom Kippur for now. That's Ruchoni ben Akana Shita. We understand. You shecht a behemah on Shabbos. The person is chay lisa. Nonetheless, the shechitas kshera. So the Rishonim ask a question. Someone who's mechalal Shabbos b'farhesia, mum mechalal Shabbos b'farhesia, is dino ka'oved avodah zarah. And an oved avodah zarah who shechts, even though we know he didn't shecht l'shem avodah zarah, it could be a noachite. A noachite who shechts an animal, even if you're watching the shechita is psula almost always shalom say midaraisa. A nachri is not a bar shechita. So if a mum mechalal Shabbos b'farhesia is dino ka'oved avodah zarah, so the Shechita should be Psula. So the Rishonim come up with the Teretz to explain why basically he only becomes Pasul after the Shechita is completed. He wasn't Pasul before. In other words, the way the Rambam explains it, the Rambam says that when you shecht an animal, it's a process. The process is in two stages. Up until and including 50%, and then more than 50%. In order for Shechita to be Shechita, you have to shecht the Rov. 50%+. So the question that you really even ask is internally in the Shechita. When he first starts to cut the animal's neck and it's bleeding right now, you would think, well, he's become pasul then, but the Shechita's not complete yet. So why is he the Mumer? So the Rambam says, because the Shechita on the first 50%, meaning any part that's not enough to be mashed with the animal, is not a violation of Malacha Daraisa because it's a Makalkal. If you shechted the animal 50% and it's an Avela, the Rambam would say you're Potter on Shabbos because you did a much more Kilkul than you did any Tikkun. So it's only when you shecht that literally that thing that pushes you over the line, over the goal line, to the 50%+, that's when the Shechita is done and you weren't the Mummer before then. Okay. So the question that the Ksos is bothered by is, how do you know? Typically speaking, if a person is Mechal Shabbos b'farhesya, right, they do it b'nezid, it's not that they were shtaying away. They were davening b'kavana every day. Erev avok of etzarayim. They still have a 6-hour morning seder, a 10-hour night seder. Everything was good. And they had their seder on Shabbos, they went to shir, they had some shulin, they made brach some asam, and all of a sudden he just walks out into the backyard, takes a knife. Okay, I think I'm going to be Mechal Shabbos now b'farhesya. That doesn't likely happen. So the question one might ask is, you know, that it's like Elisha ben Avuya. They said, how could Elisha ben Avuya, how could this happen, what he did? So they said that, an agada, it's a very important agada, psychological purposes. They say that when Elisha ben Avuya stepped on the base medrash, the sarm of apocryphus fell out of his lap. And this, even when he was learning, still learning, he was already going down that path. So why aren't we afraid that this person, who was Mechal Shabbos for Hesed, who's now a Mumar because he did Shechita, that he already had gone off, that the Yayin had already turned to Chometz? That's the question. So the Ksos says they're not at all similar. Why? Go ahead. That's what he meant when he said, "Afal Gab de Mumar, Kol Aedios v'Chal Shechitas Ksherim At Shehemir." And we don't say Tarte L'Reisa. Tarte L'Reisa is number one, Behemet v'Chayav v'Cheskas Yisra Medas, like the previous case of the Taz. And number two, he's a Mumar l'Fanecha. Yes, he once had a chazaka being kosher, being a Yirei Shamayim. Not anymore. So why isn't this a two against one? So he says, Hainu Mishum.
We have a subject of this missing portion. Amos I asked that when it happened, and we should have because of this, I mean, we say the call of Paris Kmein. The name came to so Hakanami, the low we have the Enon of Arizo, Masai also. We don't know when it's very place. Alright, who would know about the Mikvah, Shlekanikva, Shdimda, Mikvah, measured and found to be lacking. And that it should, I guess, be considered to be Tamei or Amumar for previously.
Okay. So, the chiluk that the Ksos makes is that when you know when the psul happened, you don't ask whether maybe there was more pasulus earlier. In other words, the reason why this guy is a mummer is because you watched him do the shechita on Shabbos. So he's a mummer now. He's a mummer l'chal Shabbos for Hesed. You don't say, oh, well, we know this happened now, but maybe other things, we just imagine other things happened. No. We don't. But when it comes to the mikvah, we have no idea when it became chaser. We know when this guy did his act of mumaris, but we have absolutely no idea when the mikvah became chaser. And that's why it's a problem there. In the same way, for the Taz, a shochet who forgot Hilchos Shechita, we know that he doesn't know it now, but we have no idea when he forgot it. That's what the Ksos says. So that's his kasha. So Gabe and Nissim pointed out, and they asked a very, very important question, which on the surface seems to make the Ksos very difficult, from the Gemara in Nida. Because the Gemara Nida thought there was a stira initially between Mikvah Shenenda Adonim Sachasar and the Isha who's Ro Adam. There's a stira in Din. There's a stira in Din. And the Gemara was bothered by that. The stira in Din is that by Mikvah Shenenda Adonim Sachasar, all the Taros are Tmeos Lamafreya Bevadai. Bein b'shus ha'yachad, bein b'shus ha'radim. There's no suffix. Whereas when it comes to kol anashim dayan shaitan, in that discussion, say, A, for Beis Shammai, they're tahoros l'mafreya, and for Beis Hillel, they're tmeiros only mitafik. So the answer was the Gemara's question. And the Gemara eventually comes up with an answer. What's the Gemara's answer? Hasan parati ha'chachana. It's a two against one. But, as Gabe and Nissen pointed out in their discussion with me, why is it that the mikvah we project backwards the psul the mikvah? So let me ask you a question. When you come in front of us, what makes the mikvah psul? It doesn't have 40 saw. When did the mikvah become psul? We have no idea. But what we can say for sure is that it was possible before we measured it. It was possible before we measured it. Because you come in and you come into the mikvah, I take my mikvah measuring stick, I stick it in, it turns out the water's too shallow. When did it become too shallow? I don't know, but sometime before now. When a woman becomes anita, meaning when she discovers she's bleeding, when does she become anita? When she's bleeding. Now, she's bleeding now. Do you have any evidence that she was bleeding before? No. So when she comes to us, this is what, it says, I just bled on October 13th, 9:31 a.m. That's when she becomes anita. What gives you the right? Why would you even think to be masticated earlier? Bishlama by a mikvah. So when you measure it, it did become chaser now, literally now, it became chaser earlier. Now, yes, it's possible by aniga, as the Gemara says, hagas haget, spreadsheet, it was building up. It's possible. But by a mikvah, we know it didn't happen now. We know it happened before now, and we have no idea when. By aniga, she's seeing it now. Now, you want to say, this now is what makes her anita. Now you want to say, but maybe this happened really was a process and all that. I mean, maybe. But by the same token, maybe this guy was doing stuff before also. But we don't say that because we can look at the act now. We see him shech on Shabbos. He's not saying some more now. We're not masking things earlier. And Eid Zomim testifies, of course, he's a liar, and for all we know, his earlier testimonies can be possible. We have no evidence to it. But from the moment he testified with the aid of Sheker, that's what he's lifts on. So why is the Nida case any different? The Gemara comes up with a different teretz. The Gemara's teretz is ha-cha-chada ha-cha-chada ha-santarti. Right? By mikvah, you have cheskas tuma of the gavra, or the staff, plus the mikvah's chasa lefanecha, against the mikvah was once kasha, the last time you measured it. Whereas by Nida, all you have is the woman is coming to Manah, but she was Tahora before. And now we're trying to figure out when. So it's a one against one, Chazaka wins. That's what the Gemara says. That's what status quo Chazaka is. When there's nothing else other than status quo Chazaka that you now know changed, you assume to change at the last possible moment. But in the case of the Mikvah, you have another Chazaka working against the original Cheskas Kashas of the Mikvah. So why does the Gemara have to give that answer? They're not similar at all. That the Nida had some, there was some kind of cheskas tum, I don't know how that would be. How is that different than then the Mumra Hushats? He used to be kosher. He's a Rasha now, but the Behema has a cheskas iser. So the answer that so says is doesn't matter. Because it's irrelevant, because we know when he became possible, when he shechted on Shabbos. You want to say maybe it was puzzled earlier? That's very nice. I mean, maybe. Lots of things could be the case, but we don't know about. So why is Nida in any way comparable to Mikvah, putting aside the two-on-one? Do people understand that question? It's an excellent question. Again, let me say it one more time. The Ktsos makes a chiluk between a psul that we know when it happens and a psul that we don't know when it happened. Meaning, the psul Yishech on Shabbos, that's a psul he's a mamar now. The case of Mikvash and then the Tzachasar, it's not becoming possible now. It became possible already. Earlier, we have no idea when. So that's how he explains the distinction between these two. In other words, each one has a cheskas isser. The cheskas tuma of the stuff you immersed in the mikvah. The cheskas isser of the behemah. You have the original cheskas kashrus of the mumar, and the cheskas kashrus of the mikvah. And now he's a mumar, he's no longer a kasher, and the mikvah is no longer a mikvah, it's chaser. So the difference is that by the mikvah, shenin, it's a chaser, we have no idea when it became. And therefore, you go all the way back to the last time you knew it was good. Whereas by the Mumar, we know when he became Pasul, when he shechted on Shabbos. So the question that Gabe and Nisim are asking is, when it comes to Nida, we know when she becomes a Nida. If in fact a woman, it would be more analogous to a case where a woman found this bleeding, but she didn't know when she actually bled. Although that might get into some cases. But she finds this blood, she has no idea when. But it was clearly earlier, but we have no idea how much earlier. So maybe that would be analogous. Maybe that's why it might be relevant. But the standard case is, Anisha's Ro Adam. She's Ro Adam. And our question is, when was she Ro Adam? Well, the answer is, when she saw it. You're worried, maybe she bled earlier. That's very nice, but you don't need, in other words, we know when she was Ro Adam. And so that seems to me to be more analogous to the Mumar who shechts. So that's the question. If the Tosas Chiluk is correct, it seems to be against the Gemara. Unless you say that the Gemara could have given that teretz, but it gave this teretz instead. Any thoughts on that? I have a thought, actually. I'm not convinced it's right. Other than to say the Gemara was giving that answer, it would be another way of saying the Gemara gave one answer to the scenario in which the woman doesn't actually know. She knows that she bled early, but she's not sure when. So in that case, even though she's not sure when, because it's a one-on-one, the cheskas tar of the woman wins. But if you're not going to say that, Rami?
I was saying, I have no idea if this is actually true, but I was thinking maybe it's possible that with tuma and tara, like what a certain status is more dependent on either you seeing it or you pronouncing it that way. I was thinking of maybe comparing it to a house that has taras doesn't actually become tame until.
Right, so that's sui generis to taras. Taras is exeris akasam. So, but by some of it, that makes the question worse, no?
Well, no, it would say that in some cases at least, I wasn't sure if that was in fact meaning to taras, but maybe it's possible that something that is tuma isn't necessarily related to a certain event in time, but your experience of that.
I understand that, but I think you're making the question worse, because then you're saying it's irrelevant when she actually bled. It's only relevant when she knows that she bled, when she experiences it. So even more so, right? In other words, tuma of it, and right. I don't think we have, so. I don't think that solves the problem, Brian.
Now,
so there's a difference between Efshah. Well, I'm going to go down this terrace, but it's, in other words, by the mikvah, the difference in the mikvah is the Gemara suggests that the mikvah could be a gradual process. And therefore, it's not like it just happened this second. It was something that must have been in progress a while already. So the Gemara says that could also be true about Anita. But the distinction that I'm making in the question is, by Anita, it's possible that there was a gradual blood buildup until it finally came out because there was too much of it. But it's also possible that when she sees the bleeding there, that's when she bled. Whereas by the mikvah shenimna menin tzachaser, it didn't happen just there. That we know. It might have happened an hour ago. It might have happened 30 hours ago. But it didn't happen. We didn't witness the chasering practice. We didn't witness that then, and we know it didn't happen now. And once we're going back, once we have to go back in time, then we go back all the way to because of the Cheskas Tumah, we go all the way back to the last time the mikvah was Nimdav and Nimitz Malek. So yes, it's true the Nida could, but the mikvah had to. Yes, Alina. No, the Gemara says that. It doesn't say that is definitely the case. It says it in response to the possible suggestion that the reason why a mikvah is different, because a mikvah could have been a gradual process. The Gemara says so could the dam. She could have bled into the bayis achitzon, but there wasn't enough blood to make its way out. The Gemara, right? But I'm saying something different, based upon the way I understand the mitzvos, is that seeing the mikvah that it's chasa now, is not the act of the mikvah becoming possible. Seeing the woman who says, I bled now, is the act of the woman becoming a nida. So a mikvah had to have happened earlier. Whereas the nida, it's possible it was accumulated, but we have no evidence that.
Is that meant to be chronological or causal? Meaning, is that simply that the mikvah had to have happened before maybe you stick the measuring stick in and it punctures something and water drains out. I mean, maybe it is right now. Like, as...
I don't think that's the case, honestly.
I mean, it's not likely, but it's just as possible.
Firstly, that would be a monster chiddush. Well, but...
My point is that it's not as... I don't think it's necessarily the case had to have been that the mikvah was chaser for a significant amount of time earlier.
I didn't say significant.
But not the same, but not necessarily the case.
Because if someone stuck it in and realized they made a hole, then that might be a totally different discussion. When you could say, in this. What's that?
They didn't
realize. Ephraim? You know that it was chaser about chaser before this. You don't know that it was actually less than 40 before this.
Well, my assumption is that we're not talking about, I mean, again, if chaser v'asi means I assume we're dealing with the case where if you would have plotted out in a consistent way, it already would have, we don't know exactly, it would have been this cell a while ago.
We're waiting and measuring it after we've
done that. There are two ways a mikvah is possible. You can have a gradual evaporation, and anything like that. And then you can have a hole bursts in the wall, which we would normally see. Now, by the latter case, at least you could talk about, okay, there, it's a given moment in time. Whereas if it's the evaporation route, which is then, you know, it couldn't have happened just now. It couldn't have happened in that. And there's a certain amount of time for sure it goes back. Let me just make the following suggestion, and I'm not totally satisfied with it. There are really three kinds of chronological, you know, imputings to the possibles of things. There's the thing that you know was only now. There's the thing that happens now, and you judge it now, but it's possible it's gone a long time. And there's something that has to have been true before. The mumar, we may not know what's in the man's heart, but we know that this act of becoming a mumar that we see, that's all there is to it. It's exactly when he shechted. The act of that act, which renders him a mumar, cannot go back any earlier in time. The mikvah shenim devinim sechaser is something that I would say for sure goes back in time. The nida case is in between. The nida case, on the one hand, bleeding now makes our nida. That in fact is the ikar hadin. But it's possible that this bleeding started out by an accumulation of blood in the bayis achitzon in what they call the cervix, that just didn't come out until enough of it accumulated. But she was already tamei. Right? The din is, I mean, what this is worth. Dam is the tamei in the bayis achitzon. Blood inside the uterus is not yet the nida. Once it comes out, and the bayis achitzon even does come out of the body, she's already tamei nida. So it's possible that Tos would say that the only time he says you ignore the cheskas issur, is when you can sort of isolate the exact moment when he becomes a mumar without any evidence to anything else of mumaris. It's when he did the shechita. So there, you can say he's a mumar now, this act began and ended, we can identify certainly when it began, and therefore it has no impact on anything before. But by a nida, granted by a mikvah, for sure it's chaser earlier, and we're projecting back the last known time is kasher. But even by a nida, we don't know that she became a nida right now. Maybe hagas hagas chazizay. Maybe she saw it was accumulating, and she only sees it when it accumulates enough. And that's why the Gemara has to say, by a nida, it's a one-on-one. By a mikvah, it's two against one. Okay, question here?
Why are we not willing to say that the Mishnah is discussing a case in which she didn't actually see herself, she just saw a dam on his clothing?
The complication with that is that's a kesem. Is that a kesem? Yeah, that's a kesem. I just want to make sure that I'm not making that up. Kesem. Yeah, it's a kesem. Even though it's wet, it's still a kesem. Still a kesem. It has to be b'vsara. Kesemim are d'rabbana. Yes, I know it may surprise you, but yes, the Gemara in, if you ever learn Nida for Hilchos Nida, one of the first Gemaras they give you is that Tumas Ksamim we pass is only the Rabbanan. And the example the Gemara gives is a woman who sits on a stone bench and she gets up and she sees blood on the bench but doesn't find any blood if she would do Bedika herself. And you know the blood came from her, you know where it came from her. But because stone is not Makabal Tuma, stone clay is not Makabal Tuma. Anything that's not Makabal Tuma is not Makabal Ksamim. Maybe one sheet in Tanan, that's how we pass it. It has to be on something white and it has to be on something that's Makabal Tuma. Hence, anybody who learns Hilchos Nida will understand the relevance of colored garments as opposed to white garments. I don't know by definition. By definition, I don't think you can get that by Nida. Because otherwise, it's. Tumas Ksama may also be Matam and Afreya. That's a separate sugya. Right now, we're talking about Re'iyah, actual real time. So it's hard to imagine that that's the teretz. Question, anybody? Yes?
So, this answer is relying upon the fact that we're saying that by a mumar, it's less likely that doing this act now indicates that you had...
No. It's not that it's less likely. This act cannot work backwards. This act is enclosed. We know when this act began and ended.
We know when
the act that renders him a mumar, we know when that started. By a nida and a mikvah, we don't know when it started. Now, by a mikvah, we know it didn't happen now. By a nida, it could have happened now. That's why we're discovering it now. So it's possible, therefore, that the distinction between the guy who loses his shechita knowledge and the mumar, even take those cases of shechita, in one case, because we don't know when he lost his knowledge, and it's the act of losing his, of being dipping below a certain threshold. We discover now that he forgot all five Hilchos Shechita. But at some point he forgot one, then he forgot Shir, and he forgot Drasa, and he forgot Halada, and he forgot, what did I forget? Shir, Drasa, Halada, I guess I can't do Shechita, Hagrama, and Ikur. Right? So he didn't forget them all, he didn't forget them all. He's not forgetting now. He forgot them over time. We don't know when he fell below the threshold. So there, we say the Cheskas Tumah Behema renders his Kalim Psulim. I mean, it would render any Kishecht possible, but most of what he shechted is no longer in the world, that's why they don't talk about the Behemoths that he shechted. They talk about his Kalim. They assume that they're trade, because the meat that he shechted and ate and cooked in his stuff is trade. So whereas by the Mumar, we know exactly what he did to become a Mumar. We know when that started. So you're wanting to project from one thing to a different Maisa. And as you're saying, because he's a mummer now, maybe he was going off the derech already. Can't do that. You can't say that because she was bleeding now, this occasion, maybe she bled on another occasion. That you can't do, but you can say, maybe this bleeding extends back. We don't know how far. And maybe, and vandai, this mikvas chaserus extends back. So that, I think, answers the the question, the excellent question that you asked, but are you satisfied with that answer, Nissim? Okay. Would you tell me if you weren't? Okay. Okay, so the Nesivas, the Tos continues. He has this question. Elami, different Arif. Go ahead. No, let's pick on somebody else. Rami?
Elami, different Arif. Rami, it is Sarsha Husmu. Mashma, Kidir Hari Bash, Sab Deva Inan, Ruka Timatan, Tim Lokin, Rinan Hayom, Husha Fat Mushak.
Right, this is by the Shtar. In other words, you only can parcel the Adim on the Adim Zoma of Ashtar. You can only parcel them from the time that you know that they are that they signed on this piece of paper, which is not the date that it says on the shtar. It's some other date. It could be before, it could be later, doesn't matter. Bottom line is only from the time you know the shtar exists, you know that these Eidim are psalm. Only from the time you know their chasimos exist on the shtar, right? The shtar could have existed 3 weeks ago, but they only signed on it yesterday. So it's only when they put their signature to paper, that's when they are psalm from. When was that? We have no idea. So the Rif says that they're only puzzle from the time you know they were Chosein Bechein. Yeah. So we treat the same way as we do the Nida case, and we treat the same way as we treat the same thing as the Rivash's case. Go ahead. I mean, Satosa says that Tarti L'Reisa only makes you lose if it's something that could be a gradual process. But here, it's not Shayach by Risha to say that, because they do something. I mean, I'm not sure why this should be the case. They do something. They do a Maisa here. Now, by a Mumar, B'Shchita, we know when the Maisa Aver took place. Here, we don't know when the Maisa Aver took place, but it was a punctual. It was one point. Arami?
Can you really say the same thing that that's the way like a Mipa works also, that there is a definitive point in time where it gets below the 40 sound mark?
Your question's a good question. It makes it sound like what really we're evaluating is how did we get from 45 sa to 35 sa? And we're treating that. That's a really good question. You're saying, anything that's a gradual process, definitionally you have to go back in time. And once definitionally you have to go back in time and you don't know where to stop, you go all the way. Whereas the Sule Eidos is not a process.
I don't know that the process
versus not a process. This could have happened just now. You're saying the Tsuleidus could have happened just...
How long ago did it likely happen?
Oh.
So likely much longer ago than right now, which we just don't know how far
back. So that's another way of saying that here it's possible the Tsule really just happened.
Yes.
Whereas by the Mikvah, it could not have just happened now. We just don't know how far to go back. Maybe. Okay. Go ahead. Continue. Okay. So the Ktos is left with a question, which is how is this different than, how is the mikvah case different than the case, the risk case and the Rivash's case? He doesn't know how those fit with the prince of the mikvah case. So the Nesivos responds, and what does the Nesivos say? Elimelech. Yes. You have it backwards. You have backwards. The chazakos by the tumah case, by the mitzvah case, are chazakos hamevaros. They clarify fact. They clarify what the reality is. The cheskas mamon is not mevaros anything. It's just you can't collect, generally speaking, some unless you have proof. You can't be motzi the anamosach b'la rayas. It's far exeris. The bottom line is, it doesn't. The fact that hamotzi mechaver al haraya doesn't actually in any way intimate what the facts really are. So, if, for example, I lend you money, and you claim that you pay me back. So if you say, Tarati, who has the cheskes b'mamon? And the answer is you. Now, we've established here, you don't deny that I loaned you the money. As we know, saying that you claim you didn't loan the money, you certainly didn't pay me the money back. But you say you borrowed the money and you paid it back. And let's assume for the moment that whatever the case is, that if you don't have a shtar, so that you're potter. Maybe there's a shuas hesis to Rabbanan, but you're fundamentally potter. Why are you potter? The answer is a motzi mechaver al haraya. Assuming that we know that you borrowed the money from me, does the fact that you're mosak on your property generally, on your assets, does that in any way make a suggestion? Does that intimate in any way that it is likely, on some degree, on some level, that you pay the loan back, that you don't owe me the money? What would you say? The fact that you are mosak on the money, does that in any way suggest whether you did or didn't pay the loan back? What do you guys think? This is the crucial point. Again, I lend Eli Melech money. That's not disputed. He claims he paid it back to me. I claim he didn't. Halach is amotzi mechavel arai. I have to prove he didn't pay it back. But I ask you, does the fact that he's mosak on it in fact tell us that there's a presumption that we can reasonably assume that he paid it back? The fact that you're mosak on all of your assets, does that in any way mevarer that you don't owe me the money? Of course not. Not in the least bit. The only time I can think of that a cheskas mamon maybe could be claimed, and I'm not even sure that that's true, that to be mevarer is, you know, I'm holding on to my phone. I'm holding on to this phone. Better. I'm wearing a watch. What would you say if I claim that this watch is mine? Is the fact that I'm wearing the watch, that I'm holding on to, does that suggest that it could very well, likely, probably, in some level, be mine? Arguably, yes. The fact is, the possessions, you have a room of your own in your apartment, Eli Melech? The things that exist, that hang out in your room, what percentage of those belong to you? You and your family? Yeah. Right? So there's a fair assumption, if I walk into your apartment, I visit your apartment, then I go one apartment, second apartment, it's a pretty good presumption that the objects in this apartment, in this room, belong to the person who sleeps in that room. And the objects in this room belong to the person who sleeps in that room. So I could at least argue there's some type of a presumption. That's the chazaka dasim kachuba, maybe. That, in fact, when you mosak on a specific object or objects, that's yours. But let's say there's a dispute about whether or not you sold me that object. And let's assume there's a dispute whether you sold me the object when we were away. When we did a kinyan chalipin on your object. And we're still away. Right? We were in Harriman State Park and we make a kinyan chalipin on your shtender that's in the base medrash. Okay, that would be an umda debuchach, you didn't sell to me, but okay. Right? You make a kinyan chalipin on some object that you could equally sell. The fact that you're mosak on it in your apartment, does that tell us anything? Is that mevarer anything? If my claim is you sold me that object but we weren't anywhere nearby for me to actually take possession of it. Is that mevarer anything? Let's go to the case of Machlif Parah B'Chamor. How do we paskin in that case? If the Parah is Omedes in the Simta, In the Agam, excuse me. In the Agam. The Parah omed us in the Agam, and we don't know when the Parah gave birth. How do we paskin? The Mishnah says Chokin, but we don't paskin that way. How do we paskin? Who gets that vlad? Yeah, I know, but it's there's no motzi here, it looks like. The Marakama. The Marakama. So I ask you, that's kind of a musak, the Marakama. It's not exactly, it's a different kind of chazaka. The Marakama, the last known definite owner. Well, no, that's the wrong way of putting it. The person who, it's through inertia, in effect. Does the chazaka, the Marakama, in any way mevarer, is it mevarer that you own it now? We could debate that point. What is the, yeah, maybe even better, what is the cheskas marakama in a sense almost analogous to? Not clear. It might be analogous to a status quo chazaka. If you read the Ksosa's discussion in the Shev Shmaitza, and not in the Shev Shmaitza, in the Kuntras HaSvekos, that the Nesivos makes reference to at the end, right? At the end, the Nesivos says that the Ksos says the same thing. The Ksos doesn't say the same thing as the Nesivos says. Explain it here. What the Ksos says is that a cheskas mamon is not a chazaka mevareres. He uses different terms. He uses machria versus I forget what in a different way than we've used it. You know, I probably should use the term mevarer versus a hanhaga. Achra, you could see maybe it's more like a mevara. I'm not sure. But let's use the terms mevara versus a hanhaga. Hanhaga is what you do, because you need to do something. Mevara actually tells you something. So it sounds like the chazaka, the status quo, is actually a chazaka hamachir or umavareris. In other words, it does tell you something based upon Newton's first law. Right? Inertia. Objects in motion tend to stay in motion. That we really accept that as a principle, not just in the physical realm, but in the metaphysical realm. But the Ksos himself says that the cheskas mamon itself is not machri anything, it's not mevarer. Because, again, you could conceive in certain cases, but in many cases, firstly, abstract debts, for sure not. Whether you do or don't owe me the money, again, we could distinguish a little bit. If I claim that you loaned me money, borrowed money from me, and I deny, and you deny that you borrowed money from me, so you could say, well, do you typically start out assuming people borrowed money? Then you might have a kind of a rove, right? Statistically speaking, you can look around this room and say that in any two of us, there's a high probability that A did not borrow from B. But let's say we established that A borrowed from B. And now the only question is, did B pay back the money? A pay back the money? Well, being Mosek doesn't tell you anything. So the Ksos says the only time you can say that the chazaka, when you have a status quo chazaka that has now changed, but there's another external chazaka, the only time you can say that you push things back to the last possible time is when you have a chazaka mevareris. In other words, here on the one hand, you have a chazaka, it was this way. Now you know it changed. Normally we would say, when did it change? The last possible moment. Until we know for sure it had to change. Except that now we're running up against something else that suggests a different kind of mevarer. The person was tame, and they remained tame until we know that they became tohar. So the Nesiva says, yes, when you have a chazaka hamevarer, which has been undermined, and you have another chazaka hamevarer, so that other chazaka is going to win. Because it's basically strong chazaka against weak chazaka. But the cheskas mamon is not mevarer anything. It's just a way to be, a way to do. Whether or not Elimelech pay me the money back or not, the fact that theoretically whatever money he would pay me, he's holding on to, in no way is mevarer anything, anything. So the Nesiva says that the fact that Reuven owes Shimon money according to the Shtar, but we don't know whether the Edom are kshayim or not. Well, the fact that Reuven is holding on to the money does not shed light at all on whether he owes the money or not. So all we're left with is, these Edom are psulim now, once upon a time had a cheskes kashrus. We don't know when they become pasul. So the normal approach when you have a status quo chazaka, which has now changed, is to assume the change at the last possible moment. Oh, but you have something working against that? The answer is, you don't have anything working against that. In fact, you just have a principle that if we're not sure, we're going to say, Amotzi mechavel harayim. That doesn't shed any light on the actual facts of the case. And therefore, the Nishiva says, you just ignore that chazaka. That chazaka gives you no information. Unlike cheskas tumah in the mitzvah case does give you information. The cheskas tumah in the mitzvah case gives you information. This person is probably still tameh. Because they were tameh until we know they changed. They remain tameh. But the money case is just what we do. We don't actually, it doesn't tell you any facts. When Elimelech wins his case against me, when he claims vaday he didn't pay back the loan, right? It's not because he's probably telling the truth. He's probably right. Not at all. We have no idea. But he's mochzak, so that's what we do. That's what the Nesiva says. It's very, very, very sharp. So this, I would just conclude, you know, goes back possibly, you know, I'm not sure I want to have them tied together, because otherwise the Pesach Halacha is going to wind up in the Stira. But just as we have a machlokas, it would seem, although maybe the Nesivas doesn't, maybe the Tzos doesn't really argue, which makes the problem even worse, that the chazaka of cheskas mamon is a chazaka of hanhaga, not a chazaka that's mevarer or anything. So if that's the case, go back to our Tosas and Baba Basra, the two deos and Tosas, right? Tosas versus the Riva. So we suggested that Tosas believes, Tosas who says that whenever they're muhsak, you say yachloku, and you don't say kol da'alam gavar, is because the fact that they're both holding on to it, anu yodim, that they both own part of it. And therefore, kol da'alam gavar would wind up being an avla. And the Riva said the muhsakas is irrelevant. So we suggested that for Tosos, they're being muhsak as mevara. For the Riva, it's not mevara anything. It's just a way of doing things, and if we have other reasons to do things here, then we'll do things that way, like Ramai. The problem that I'm worried about is that if you paskin like the first Teretz of Tosas, which we do, and yet you paskin, the Ramah says what he says here, those seem to be in tension with one another. So what I feel that you have to say in that case, but, you know, is that maybe the Tzos and the Nesivos, certainly the Tzos would be modeh, that if we're fighting over one object, and I'm holding this object, probably the person holding it is in fact the owner. In the sense that most objects that are in my possession, if the debate is over whether the object is really mine, not whether I owe somebody, but whether you claim the object is yours, I claim it's mine, in that case, that chazaka, the nesivos might be moda, that cheskas mamon, being mochzak on the object, might actually be considered some kind of mevara. And that's how he, at least according to Tosas, right? He could say that within Tosas. Here, you're talking about whether I do owe the money, which is just dependent upon whether the Edom are chairman or not. The kashrus of the Edom, the fact that I'm holding the money, has no bearing whatsoever on the circumstance. That's the danger of this, which is the shitas have to line up at least in some way. Or at least you can't wind up with an, you don't wind up with an inconsistent psak in Shulchan Aruch. Because at the very least it means the mechaber then did not read it the way we're reading it. So it's possible they can be reconciled. It's possible. Okay, any questions?